Take the bass line out. Uh-huh. Here go. Yeah. Let it bump, though.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox podcast, post-draft lottery edition. I am not coming at you with Andy Bailey, but I am fortunate enough to be joined by Alec Nathan of Bleacher Report, a breaking news writer and self-ascribed Sixers aficionado slash Joel Embiid bandwagon driver slash Richaun Holmes is better than Nerlens Noel. Also bandwagon driver.
All right, that last part's not true, but the rest of it's very true.
But can we agree that Richaun Holmes is better than Nerlens Noel?
I mean, kind of. No, I don't want to go there yet. I feel bad. I love Nerlens.
Okay, so to clear the record, I, Dan Favalli, am driving that bandwagon. Alec has one foot on and the other one is off.
I need to be convinced a little further. That's a subject for another day, but I could be convinced.
So we should start with the Sixers.
Yes.
Who were They were clearly winners of the lottery night. It could have been a little bit better if the Lakers didn't keep their pick. But
I'd say, all things considered, pretty good, though, right?
And the thing I'll say is, not that it's going to be better that the Lakers pick didn't convey this year, but you don't need, like, so many raw players going all in at once. Yeah. You have Embiid has only played 31 games. He's not raw. But Simmons has to make his debut. Now you're going to have another top three rookie. Like, just save that pick. That top three, top five pick for next year when you're a little bit more established.
Yeah, and at some point they're going to run out of just spots. Like they need
this year.
You would think about it. They have the Lakers pick next year and the Kings pick in 2019. It's like, where are all these guys going to play? Like, you just, there's no conceivable scenario where you keep all of them. But that aside, last night was a huge success. I'd say for three reasons. One, they moved into the top three. They were projected at four initially. Two, even though the Lakers kept their pick, they're at two, and they won't have to tempt, the Sixers won't be tempted by Lonzo, presumably. And three, they get that pick next year, and the Lakers probably aren't going to be very good this year. I mean, they won, what, 26 games, chart a little improvement. They're hovering at 30, 31.
They'll probably bottom five record next year, maybe bottom seven if they're lucky.
Right, and we assume the Sixers are going to be better than them, right? Assuming health, which I know we can't really assume, but for now we'll be optimistic. But yeah, I'd say they're happy about it. And I mean, they're in line to get the wing of their choice, basically.
So they I ask you who you want them to take or who they should take, what happens if within the top two, let's say the Celtics, who are going to have to be a topic, take Fultz, and then let's just say that the Lakers throw everyone for like a whirl and they go with Josh Jackson or Jason Tatum. Excuse me, I don't know why I'm searching for words here. And then Lonzo Ball is just still on the board. Do the Sixers, you could argue, I know the Sixers want to play Simmons at point guard, but they don't really, their best point guard is TJ McConnell, like their best actual point guard.
You say that like it's a bad thing. TJ's can do no wrong anyway.
Do they take Ball if he's still there? Any unlikely?
Do they? I would certainly hope not. I don't want to conflate the kid with his dad. I just don't like his fit on the roster, and this goes with other guys who I would pass on. But I just don't like his fit there. I mean, he shot well last season, but do you really want him floating off the ball that much? Like, they're dedicated to Simmons as the primary playmaker. And you know Simmons isn't going to really float off the ball that much. And if he is, it's because he's...
Not to start, anyway.
Right, not to start. And if he is, he's probably going to be getting the ball in the post. Like, that's why he's going to be off the ball, because he's trying to get deep position. I just don't like that fit. I don't like the idea of having two non-spot-up guys in the same lineup who are super ball-dominant. Granted, he's a great passer. He has unbelievable feel for the game. I just don't really like the fit there. But if he was there, I would pass over him. If Jackson was the pick at two for some reason, I would honestly, I'd prefer Fox over Ball. I'd prefer Monk over him, to be quite honest.
Monk. And just, I would even, just
honestly,
fit.
And yeah.
But De'Aaron Fox, I'm surprised that you would just...
Yeah, maybe I'm a little too enamored with his athleticism. Like, he has the athleticism that Lonzo doesn't, and I'm so enamored with just the above-the-rim stuff. And his defensive potential, too. He's long. And I know Lonzo's a little, I mean, Lonzo's what, 6'7", wingspan at 6'6", and Fox is like 6'7", at 6'4". But I like the idea of him. He's a little more explosive. I think he gives him a little more flexibility. But ideally, in my dream scenario, they get, I would say my board for them specifically, I would say Fultz would obviously be number one on any board. But assuming he's gone, then the second guy on that board, I would have Jackson. And I would have, I honestly think I'd have Monk above Tatum. I don't like Tatum's fit there at all.
That's interesting to me. But we had a conversation, I think, the other day about Monk where he's going to be better than Tim Hardaway Jr. I just see too much of Tim Hardaway Jr.
So here's the thing, the distinction between the two, not Tim and Malik, but Tatum and Monk, is that Tatum to me is, he's very polished. I'm really impressed by his poise. He finishes so well around the rim. But as this team is constructed, you have two guys who are already ball dominant, right? You have Simmons, who's going to be dominating the ball at the start of possessions, presumably. He's going to be running pick and roll. He's going to be setting guys up. And then you have Joe, who's your primary scorer for now. So you add Tatum to that. Tatum can do spot-up stuff. He's certainly capable. But he did a lot of ISO at Duke, a lot of high post stuff. And the other thing with him is I worry about floor balance. He takes his time. He's not really that decisive. Whereas Monk, I see he gets the ball and he's either putting it on the floor immediately and he's taking a hard line to the rim, or he's spotting up immediately and he's just firing. And I like that decisiveness more than what Tatum brings. And also, this is so the last Duke guy who we said was, who came into the draft after a freshman season. We said he was polished, not that athletic, but he had a firm repertoire of moves, and it was Okafor. And I can't do that again. I know it's a false equivalency, but it would just, it, I can't get it out of my head.
It would be, and the most used lineup, if you draft Tatum, it all of a sudden becomes probably Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Dario Saric, Tatum, and then Stauskas or Justin Ant. Like, there's not a lot of shooting in those lineups. I mean, right. you could put Covington in there, but still, you'll have one.
I just like Monk better, and I mean, I like Jackson above both of these guys. We can talk about him later, but a Monk, I just like, because he doesn't need the ball. And I also think he has potential as a secondary playmaker once he gets into the feel of, like, pro pick and roll more. I really like he attacks so hard downhill. Like, if he can put the ball on the floor and be that aggressive, but also be controlled, like, he could be a stud. But, yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
As an aside to what you were saying at the beginning of that, yeah, it's interesting if, and it probably wouldn't happen, but if the Lakers take Josh Jackson and you think the Sixers should pass on Ball, why would Phoenix take Ball? Because you have Eric Bledsoe, Devin Booker, and Brandon Knight. Maybe you take Ball and you would trade Knight. You want to trade Knight already, but what if, though, you can make a case, if the Lakers pass on Ball, you can make a case that both Philly and Phoenix would do the same, in which case Lonzo Ball would probably end up in Sacramento, which just needs to happen.
I also think you could see the Sixers take, if he was there, Sixers take Ball at three and then they dangle him in a trade to Sacramento or the Knicks or whoever, and they just try, like, if one of the, if
they
can get a
guarantee. Who do they want from the Knicks?
I don't, if they take Monk and they can strip another draft pick from, do you guys have any picks left to trade? I'm thinking no.
I will kill you.
what's the next eligible pick you have?
To trade, the Knicks can trade 2018s, I believe. They have this year, so they can.
Perfect. You guys are going to be horrible next year anyway, so that's ideal. Anyway, it's interesting.
I think Phoenix has the pie in the sky thing, but if you're sitting there and you think the Sixers would pass on Ball, Phoenix has even less of a need for Ball right now than Philly, and it would just be hysterical, borderline impossible, but hysterical. LaVar Ball and Lonzo Ball end up in Sacramento, which is still California, but it's not Los Angeles. And with that organization, that would just be...
When you think about it, though, Lonzo is the perfect guy for Vivek's 4-on-5. Ideal.
How many 6 foot, 6 inch guards are there? Between 6'5 and 6'6 guards are they all of a sudden going to have? Or 6'4 and 6'6? Like, you have Buddy Hield, you have Lonzo Ball, Malachi Richardson. What are you doing with Ben McLemore? It's just so weird.
Can we start like hashtag free Ben McLemore? I really feel so bad.
Well,
I
someone pays him enough. The
Sixers can pay him.
Well, the Sixers can pay anybody, including Kyle Lowry. So,
all right, can we not?
who are they gonna, if they draft a Jackson or if they draft a Monk, they're still gonna need a point guard. Might as well throw that money at Kyle Lowry. I'm trolling.
I'd rather pay Patty Mills, frankly.
Why?
Because he's younger. He doesn't have the injury history, and I like him. Lowry's clearly better, but he's going to cost less, and I like him floating off the ball next to Simmons more.
I guess that's fair. And then maybe that's your recruiter to get Manu there for the last year of his career at a $30 million salary.
Honestly, at this point, I love Manu. He's one of my favorite players ever. I don't even want to take him from Pop. I'd feel bad. It would just crush him.
It would be awesome. If the Sixers just threw all of their cap space at Manu, if they just gave Manu a $35 million contract for 1 year, just because they
deserving. I would be okay with that just for the legacy aspect.
For the culture.
Yeah, for the culture.
I guess bringing it back to the draft, I'm enamored with Josh Jackson myself. I think I said that I would take him. I could see the case for Fultz, but I would take him before anyone else after Fultz, like including Ball. He would be nice. The Sixers might actually need him. I know they have a ton of wings, but Stauskas is not a great defender. Robin Covington is very, very good. I love Bobby Covington, but he's also going to be a free agent in 2018, and someone's going to pay him so much money.
Yeah, someone is. And maybe that's the Sixers, but if we can agree, he's a starting caliber player, but I don't like, he's better suited on a contender as a guy off the bench.
Right. But what helps the Sixers is that the money from the cap explosions the past few years, that will have dried up a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think teams will be as spend happy.
Yeah.
But still, you would want, I mean, Josh Jackson and Robert Covington would be a spectacular defensive pairing long term.
Yep.
You have Justin Anderson too, who's insurance against Covington defensively, but what is he going to shoot in Philly?
No, nothing. But I'm with you. Jackson, I was talking about the not taking up a lot of the possessions, being a ball dominant guy and keeping the floor balance. Jackson is ideal for that. What I love that he did at Kansas all the time. I know his form's a little funky, but
a little
good. All right. It's like bordering on Sean Marion-esque, but he made like 37% of his threes. I think 85% of them were assisted. So he can spot up, and he's such an active cutter off the ball. And with Simmons, that's going to be so key. You're going to need guys just constantly moving back door on the baseline, whatever. And I think he's perfect for that. And he's not there yet, but he could be an ace defender for them.
Well, I was watching, what was the game they got blown out? Was that the Oregon game in the tournament where they got destroyed? I was watching him the entire time. I was like, so Josh Jackson just doesn't ever stop trying on defense.
I think he led all shooting guards or small forwards and blocks by like a huge amount. It was like by like 30 or something.
Yeah, no, I'm way more sold on his defense than I am on what he can do on offense. It's probably more promising though that he hit above average or an average clip from three, just because you want that guy off the ball. These low usage wings, it's like,
yeah,
I don't even know who would be a good comparison for him, but because he's listed as a guard at 6'8", which automatically I just think Chris Middleton.
I'll tell you, the comp that came to mind for me immediately watching him was Iguodala. But then I looked at Iguodala's shooting numbers at Arizona, and he was like 30% for his career. Jackson's already at 37%.
And isn't Jackson, or at least he looks longer? I don't know if it's because he's so skinny.
He looks longer. I don't know. He also stands to gain some weight if he wants to be a defender of Iguodala's caliber is shooting for the Stars, because few guys are, but... yeah, that's the first guy that came to my mind, because he's not this volume-heavy guy. And granted, Iguodala was with the Sixers because they needed him to be, but I think if you don't need him to be, it's perfect.
Well, he wasn't exactly ball-dominant at Kansas. He was an okay passer. But he wasn't averaging like a billion.
No one other than Frank Mason is ball-dominant for Bill Self. Look at Wiggins.
I don't want to look at Wiggins.
What was the knock on Wiggins, though, when he was in that same role? He was standing in the corner the whole time. and that he was passive. It wasn't, I mean, he was a little passive, but that system didn't help.
Kansas is, they churn out some of these top prospects, and the teams that they come from just like aren't all that good, and it always boggles my mind. But yeah, that would be a different topic for another day. I am all for anyone taking Josh Jackson. If the Lakers were drafting for fit and for keeps, wouldn't Josh Jackson make more sense for them too?
Couldn't you make the argument about the Celtics also? I mean, I know Fultz fits in. It's not a positional.
It's such a weird.
It's so odd.
It's such a bizarre spot because what Fultz is. I don't know if Fultz and Isaiah Thomas could play together. We've seen Isaiah play off the ball a bunch in Boston, and it's kind of worked. So maybe he could.
I think they fit.
But what is the point of paying Isaiah Thomas all the money in the world in 2018 when you have his replacement playing next to him?
Like, I mean,
why would you want to be locked in? And I love Isaiah Thomas, and he's become a cult icon in Boston. And I think the fans would probably riot if the Celtics traded him next season or didn't re-sign him. It's just, if you're drafting Fultz, shouldn't it be with the intention of Isaiah has a year left here, and if he doesn't sign it, like something way below the max? I don't know that I see the incentive necessarily to keep Isaiah and Fultz long term together.
I'm of the opinion that you just kind of take him and you figure out. I mean, Brad Stevens will figure out a way to make it work. Brad Stevens, a miracle worker. He made Evan Turner good, but he can make this work. But
man,
for me, it affects. It's like Smart more, because Smart's going to be due for an extension soon, right?
He's extension eligible this year. He'll be a restricted free agent in 2020.
And then and they have Rozier. I know Bradley signed to achieve like one of the best deals in the league.
Oh my god, I forgot Rozier's going to be extension eligible after next year.
Yeah, it's like some of these guys are casualties at some point. We were talking about the Sixers not having enough spots for all these draft picks. It's like, well, if you take Fultz and you're committed to him, there's casualties. Like either, I mean, I think Smart's a keeper, but like, you're not paying Smart, Thomas, Fultz, and Rose. That can't happen.
No, there's if you remove Fultz from that equation, you have to include Bradley, and there's no way they're paying all those
exactly.
Guys.
So there's a shakeup that's bound to happen. It's just a matter of who stays and who goes. But that's one of those things that's going to be fascinating to watch if they do take him.
Do you think the Celtics trade or keep the pick? Not by the draft, let's just say by next season.
Like logic dictates they should really just trade it, but I think they're going to keep it.
Is it wrong that I'm kind of against it?
Against what, the trade or keeping it?
That I'm against trading it. It's just,
I don't think you should be, because I mean, especially for George, he's been. I mean, the LA stuff has already beaten to death, and he has 1 year left. Are you going to really gamble on that? Unless
if
you get
he would guarantee he'd resign, it'd be interesting.
Right.
Because Paul George, in a vacuum, is the better fit. Or easier to incorporate than Jimmy Butler, just because he plays off the ball more.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I don't love Butler with IT, really, because they're both so ball dominant.
Defensively, Butler is by far the better fit than Jimmy.
Yes.
I guess a lot of it, maybe my opinion will change by the end of the Eastern Conference Finals, because I'm already of the mind that Boston is the biggest threat in the East to Cleveland, as is. I'm just not sure what that means, because Cleveland would have blitzed Washington, who would have been gassed with no depth by the time they reached each conference finals.
Maybe
they destroyed the Raptors. If you're the Celtics and you push them to a genuine six games, I'm not talking kind of a superficial competitive series like we saw with Toronto last year. If you push them to seven, is that the trigger to be like, well then we have to consolidate? And then I'm also wondering if it's Paul George. Let's just say you don't sign. First of all, they could sign Gordon Hayward, and all of a sudden you can't have Paul George. He just doesn't fit. And at the same time, it's like, well, we have Bradley and we have Smart and we could draft the number one pick. Any two of them might be worth what Butler does for us on defense, because we don't need his offense. So you have the best of all worlds there. But let's just say you go into this summer, and what if you dangle a package of just Brown and Filler and like maybe one of your other first round picks that aren't going to land, like not even the Nets pick? That might get you George. But like maybe that gets you George, because he only has 1 year left on his deal, and then you still
and then
get
you
to
swing
keep
for
all these
it.
Picks. Yeah.
Maybe the case though is you keep Fultz just for the cap flexibility. Once they get IT under contract, that's him and Horford are on max deals. You can add Fultz on a rookie
is
scale
IT
deal.
Like get a max deal at the age of 30. I just can't.
I mean, Lowry's about to get one at 31.
Lowry's a good defender.
Yeah, but you know, IT's getting one. Like, it's gonna happen.
Look, I hope he for I love
he should. Yeah, I hope he gets
Isaiah Thomas is just seems like an awesome human being. So yeah. Basketball aside, it's just like give that man his money. You give him a max. If it's a 4-year max with like a team option, but it probably won't be. Maybe if it's a player option, you'll have a light at the end of the tunnel. Like,
yeah.
I get what you're saying, though. If it makes sense to keep this pick if you're just planning on keeping this core together. If you're going to pay Bradley and Thomas and you want to keep one of Smart and Rozier and you want to keep Olynyk, you need the guys like Brown and this number one pick just to provide that, pack that impact, but without really costing you too much money. And as a fun fact before you start talking, Al Horford will explore free agency again before Jay Crowder's contract is up.
This is also – so back to your other – I want to circle back. This may be, like, very processy of me, but, like, I'm of the opinion that the Cavs are just – as long as LeBron is breathing, like, you just don't – you're not beating him. So maybe the move is you just – even if – okay, I don't think they're – I don't – right. And so you're in the Eastern Conference Finals with the way the path has been charted so far. So add Fultz. Develop him. He could be awesome his first year, but develop him. Keep the rest intact. Maybe make a few tweaks. You don't have to swing for the fences on Hayward or whatever. You know, bring Bradley back. And then by the time everything's clicking, maybe your window's open. And I know that requires being patient in Thomas's early 30s, but like, if you can afford to be patient, which it seems like maybe they can be, given the sort of unique flexibility they have on the roster, maybe that's the way to go.
I know
they don't want to hear that because they're in the Eastern Conference Finals right now, but they also...
Well, who doesn't want to hear that? It's the deluded fans or these people who just think the Boston's... I've written, I think, 3 or 4 times about why the Celtics were smart to stamp out at the trade deadline, and every time people think I'm bat crap crazy, they weren't smart to stamp out then, and if they decide to do so now... Go ahead. It's not like you said, LeBron's. It says a lot that Mark Stein reported Kyle Lowry wanted to go west because of LeBron. You're going west to contend with the Warriors, the Spurs, the Rockets, whatever version of the Clippers or Jazz might be left over. The Nuggets, who are budding superpower, because you don't want to face LeBron. There's no problem with. And look at it this way: leave the Celtics alone. Leave them alone. Don't. And I'm all for them going. I think if they keep everybody, like they could keep Olynyk's hold and they can still generate more than $20 million in cap. Go after a player, like go after Jamichael Green or somebody if you want. I'm all for them adding that way, but just stay this way. Add the number one pick. You have Brad Stevens, Jaylen Brown, who hasn't scratched the surface of what he's going to be. The rest of your core roster, Terry Rozier seems like he might be developing. And you combine that all together, especially just having a coach like Brad Stevens who can give you the edge in any game or any series, you might not even need to wait out a certain window. Maybe you're a LeBron injury or a LeBron slump or just or Kyrie Irving or just some injury away from getting past the Cavaliers in the next 3 years without making wholesale changes.
And also, is there a real need to go after like Hayward or like add Butler to your books and hamstring yourself financially?
I don't have a
problem. Then
I don't think there's a need, but there's no, to me, you don't make the trade until after free agency is over because you're not going to be able to clear the decks as easily with Butler in tow or George for that matter. But if you're going to tell me that the Celtics go out and they sign whoever, whether it's a $20 million a year player, whether it's Hayward, and then they turn around and they trade for Jimmy Butler, that's not a bad scenario either.
Yeah.
Unless they really mortgage the farm in negotiations, like I think at this point, if the Bulls ever look to trade Jimmy Butler, maybe it's not even this season, maybe it's next summer, maybe you can get away without giving any of these picks away. Maybe it's just you dangle Jaylen Brown a lower first and filler, but I'm of the mind that unless they really bend over backwards for Chicago or Indiana, which I don't think they'll do, there's not really a wrong decision here.
I have a dumb question. We talk about the Celtics going after these guys. Why can't the Sixers make a Godfather offer for Butler?
Didn't they
have the Lakers pick, the Kings pick. Like they have their own picks. They're rolling in assets. Like just throw package two of them and Okafor and go for
he's,
it.
Enough I mean, with the Okafor stuff. He's going to
retire. All right. I'm sorry. I just want him off the team.
He's going to retire a Sixer after his fourth season.
I know he has zero value. I would trade him for a second round pick, but just he's the filler at this point. But I'm saying you have all these assets that are cost controlled. Package them.
The risk. I get it. And they can make a Godfather offer. Wasn't there a rumor that they did for Paul George or something? Wasn't that out there?
There was like scuttle. I don't know if I believe it.
But they have to play the super long game. And one, it's very tough to consolidate when they don't necessarily know what they have in Simmons and Bede. They could trade this pick, or they don't know what this pick is going to become. The other thing is, Paul George is a free agent after next season. Would he stay in Philly for a reason?
I don't like George for them.
Okay. Well, Butler, even. He has 2 years left on his deal. That seems like a lifetime, but all of a sudden, you've already maxed out Joel Embiid. You've handed out a new contract to maybe Covington. You've given out extensions to some players. What if he leaves because you're still not the toast of the East? I'm not against them trying it.
I mean, yeah.
You like because you have
get the sense though that Colangelo is at some point going to make an impulsive decision and pull the trigger. That's the sense I get at least.
Well, he's already said they're looking to add veteran talent in free agency.
Right. So, but if they can, okay. So say they don't even have to part with the number three pick this year. Say they package their 2018. First, or the Lakers pick has more value. We're in agreement, right? The Lakers 2018 first and the Kings pick. You're keeping your own picks in 2018 and 2019, and then you package that with filler and you go after Butler. I mean, is that really that big of a gamble? You can't fill out the roster with all these young guys anyway.
Well, is it a little bit of a gamble in the sense that it seems crazy that we're talking about this now, but you kind of need insurance in case something happens to Joel Embiid. Like you're gonna have to start reinvesting in this roster soon, which is it's scary, but at the same time this is where we're at. Embiid has been in the league long enough to be extension eligible. You want those below market guys in case one it doesn't work out with these others, or two it does and you need to start paying Justin Anderson and Stauskas and Covington and Embiid. You're not going to pay all those guys, but you do need to pay
they're
them.
Not getting paid, but I bring
Covington
this up
better
not
get effing paid.
Covington, I want to get paid. I wouldn't pay Anderson, and I wouldn't pay Stauskas either, for that matter, as much as I like him. But I brought that up not because I want it to happen, but because I'm like bracing for it to maybe, or I'm at least bracing for the rumors again. I mean, you remember all the stuff last year about there were talks about trading up with the Celtics and all the Okafor stuff. I just figure when we get to draft day again, there's going to be crazy rumors.
Right. It's interesting. The Jimmy Butler is interesting because I don't think I gave much thought to what the Sixers could offer. It seems for the Bulls that almost the market for Butler is one, and that was Boston, just because they don't have a direction yet, and you can restock some of the decks with Butler, and he's your ticket to rebuilding. But I guess the Sixers could give them enough as well. But it wasn't like where Paul George is coming up on free agency, and you should, if you're the Pacers, you shouldn't just be talking to the Lakers. You should probably be talking to the Sixers, the Celtics, the Nuggets, and just seeing what teams are willing to give up.
George for a season does nothing for me, but also you have to consider what the Bulls want. I mean, do the Bulls just want draft picks, or do they want guys who already have years under their belt? The Celtics have that.
I think if the Celtics right now said Jalen Brown and the number one pick, I think the Bulls would do it in a heartbeat.
They would be foolish not to do
right,
that.
Right, I agree, but I was actually wrong. I was going to say Jay Crowder and the number one pick because I think they don't necessarily want to. Gar Pax doesn't want to throw in the towel completely. Right. They might view that they can kind of balance rebuilding with competing if you have Crowder. And then I don't know. I think if that was if the Celtics, in theory, offered any two of those assets, the Bulls would have to say yes. I'm just like in my head, I'm like, well, I don't know if that's too much for the Celtics. And I just don't see looking at the Cavs right now. And I'll try and look deeper as the Celtics play them in the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't see Butler or George, even if you add them to most of this core, elevating them to the Cavaliers' level.
Yeah,
LeBron is just like...
I agree.
Like age 37, LeBron, maybe. And how good is he? How long is his window? Honestly, he's 32, 14 years deep into his career. And it's kind of like, how much longer is he going to play like this? You don't think it's going to be that much longer, but what if it is?
I'm with you. I just wonder... Ultimately, how do you think Danny gets antsy? Because there seems to be after the KG stuff, after they got KG and Ray Allen and that stuff, there's always been this, you know, Trader Danny and everything. But like, and I, God knows he's armed, but like, time keeps going on and on and on, and there's just no trade there.
There's trades there. I just don't.
There's trades there. They haven't pulled the trigger. I'm saying, like, at what point is this? Does this stop being a thing?
I don't know. One of the Celtics owners was at the draft lottery, and he said that he didn't want the Celtics to trade that number one pick. So if ownership's on board with you keeping it, he might be fine being patient. I honestly think the Celtics are just waiting for free agency to see what happens there, and they'll,
as they should. They don't need to be in a rush.
But is
they hold so many cards,
right? But there, it's so easy to love every single scenario for them, and yet, you know, is Fultz and Jaylen Brown coming off the bench for the next 2 or 3 years? Is that necessarily good for their development? It's all just very weird.
I don't know, but they'll be fun as hell.
They'll be deep as hell. They're already deep as hell.
Can we for a minute, can we talk about what the Knicks do at 8? Because it's actually very interesting to me. I'm serious. I'm not trying to troll you.
yeah, go ahead.
So I've obviously been doing a lot of draft research lately. I
pronounce his name.
Granted, I don't know. Oh, I found out it's Neely Kina.
Yeah, something like that. It was actually, it's surprisingly simple, but easy to forget.
But so, okay, so I'm not well versed in the ins and outs of the triangle and the pinch post and all the everything there, but so I'm not going to theorize which guy fits best with their, you know, twisted offense, but I like Dennis Smith a whole lot. He looks like, maybe it's like a gaudy comparison, but he reminds me so much of Bledsoe when I watch him. He's got that same explosion. He's a little taller. Not the best shooter, but his shot looks pretty clean to me. I just like everything he does. And if they would just let Hornacek run, I mean, I know that's asking so much. If they let him run what he ran in Phoenix, Smith would be so perfect for that. But that's obviously not how the roster is constructed, so.
Right. You know. I think Dennis Smith would be a good fit. And I actually think he landed there in Bleacher Report's Jonathan Wasserman's latest draft when I read it, mock draft, in Dallas. That seems to make a little bit more sense for him.
Dallas makes a lot of sense, too.
Dennis Smith needs to be allowed to be a point guard to develop in the NBA. That's his best chance of succeeding, and the triangle's not going to let him do that.
The triangle doesn't let anyone do anything.
The safest picks for the Knicks to me are just go with Monk because he might be able to just be an off-ball if he's there, which he probably won't.
I don't think he's there at 8.
They need someone who's either just going to hit catch and shoot threes just because he's safe, or I think you just go with Neal Kina and hope for and then kind of hope for the best because he's a big guard and he's maybe huge. He'll help you out on defense.
And I don't mean this to troll. I mean this purely in like a physical attribute way. When I was watching his tape, his length reminded me of Carter Williams. That's not to say that's what he is. He's way more athletic. He is way bouncier, but that's just
we knew Michael Carter Williams' jumper was broken.
It was broken the second. It was dead on arrival. But I think you guys should take Markkanen, and then you corner the Markkanen. That's good. On the big Euro 3-point shooters. That'd be fun.
Go ahead. I'm so indifferent to the Knicks.
I mean, what would you pinpoint as their number one need? They need seemingly everything, right?
Yeah. They need stuff to counteract even what's on their roster. Like they need Kristaps Porzingis to play center. so it's just they don't need anything at the 4-5. Like, if you're going to run the triangle, like, you have O'Quinn and Noah and Hernan Gomez and Porzingis, you're just done there. You need everything else.
What if – I know they need – I mean, who's their backup point guard right now?
They don't even have a starting point guard right now.
What if they pass on a point
Ron
guard?
Baker.
What if they pass on a point guard and then after the lottery feels like, oh yeah, we're bringing Derek back. That's been it's like that's why we passed.
I don't see that happening.
That's not a justification, but because they clearly, like you said, they need another guy anyway. But oh my god, that would just kill me.
I wish it would kill me to the point where I thought it was so unrealistic. But Jackson at his year-end press conference was more complimentary of Derrick Rose than Kristaps Porzingis, which is just a giant ass red flag to me.
Yeah. Jonathan Isaac would be really interesting for you guys. I don't know if you...
Another 3-4, though, it's just like... I don't know. The Knicks aren't going to... Who have the Knicks developed? I'm just so... I haven't even really thought about who they're going to draft. Like, I'm just hoping it's... I'm just going to call him Frankie N at this point because I don't want to butcher his name. Just take him. He's a big guard. He can shoot. He should be able to give you more effort on the defensive end. Make Ron Baker his primary backup. If you really want to fall in love with the second coming of Brandon Jennings and Jashaun Randall, like, just go ahead. I'm so indifferent to it. Whoever they draft, they're going to end up screwing up somehow.
Who's the last guy they legitimately developed?
Besides Kristaps? Probably Patrick Ewing? Like, I don't even know. They trade all these guys before their third year, before they enter, like, restricted for, like, they got rid of Shumpert, they got rid of Tim Hardaway Jr.
I'm pulling up their draft history because I really want to look at this, actually. Oh, God, remember Andy Routens?
Remember Mike Sweetney?
They didn't... I mean, make a case for Gallo. Ish.
But he's not there. Like, that's my point. It's like, you can make a case for Chandler. Make a case for David Lee, for crying out loud. They didn't stay.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, they let David Lee go for Amari Stoudemire, which whatever at the time. The Carmelo Anthony trade was a disaster. Landry Fields was playing good under Mike D'Antoni, but you get rid of Fields, you get rid of D'Antoni. It was an absolute mess. They haven't, Channing Frye.
I mean, you guys develop Charlie Ward.
they're like the Kings of the East, and their draft history might be worse just because these guys aren't on the roster. Trevor Ariza, like, all these guys turn into NBA players elsewhere. Nene, he didn't play a game for them, though, so that doesn't even count.
Yeah.
It's just
shout out Jordan Hill, for sure.
So they're not a good draft, and Phil Jackson hasn't proved anything to me with the draft. I know it took gall to draft Kristaps because a lot of teams might have.
Has it been confirmed that was his decision, or was he talked into it?
Yeah, that's the other thing we don't know. But he, like, Kristaps fell into his lap because if Okafor was there, he would have taken Okafor. As to his defense, as would other GMs. So yes. I won't crucify him for that thought process, but I don't believe that Kristaps Porzingis, the decision to take him, let's say it even was his, it wasn't some groundbreaking. Like, thing. Like, everyone else who was clearly supposed to go in front of him already went. He was pretty much the next most talented guy on most people's boards. They were just afraid to take him. So they're a mess. They're the Kings of the East, and their draft history is arguably worse than the Kings because at least DeMarcus Cousins made it to his second contract.
Speaking of, all right, so they're Kings East. Last one you want to hit on the Kings because they were actually winners despite the swap.
But they were still kind of losers.
Well, they kind of, but they moved up three spots regardless, and they kept I mean, not that there was really a huge fear that they were going to lose the Pelicans pick, but, I mean, they're drafting at 5 and 10. They're assured. I don't think they can mess up. I know the Kings mess up everything. I don't think they can mess up this pick at 5.
Just, what are you, De'Aaron Fox for them? Or
Fox.
No, Monk would be dumb.
I think Monk would be supremely dumb. But hopefully they've learned. I mean, it's a stretch. But Fox should be. I mean, the Suns aren't drafting Fox, right? We're pretty much in agreement. That makes no sense.
They've fallen point guard drunk before. Maybe they do it again. No, but I would be shocked if they did.
So
they need to hope like hell that Josh Jackson falls to them. It has to be the hope. Or
that's not happening. If Jackson is there at Phoenix and they don't take him, they'd be insane.
Right, but couldn't if it goes 1-2 like we expect and then the Sixers decide to go with Tatum, if that happens, all of a sudden you're left with Josh Jackson.
Yeah. I mean, that's their dream scenario. It's their dream scenario, but and then at 10, I mean, 10 they could get Markkanen, Collins. I like Collins a lot.
Do you trust them to develop these guys is the question. Go through their draft history and their biggest success stories either didn't happen until after they left or they happened and then they left. Isaiah Thomas, DeMarcus Cousins, Hassan Whiteside never developed with them. They have a ton of bigs on the roster like right now. Scal looked like he might be something, but will that continue into next year? Malachi Richardson, I kind of enjoyed watching him before he was injured. Maybe he turns it. It's just, are they going to develop these guys? Buddy Hield played really well for them after the trade, too.
Yeah.
So maybe this is the dawn of something new for them. But, yes, it's great that they have two top 10 picks, but they're probably going to draft. Once you get to, like, the end of the lottery, there's, it seems like it's just clogged with, like, I don't know. They're going to draft a big, right, at number 10.
There's bigs. The end of the lottery is crammed with this.
Non-shooters?
I mean, yeah, because there are no bigs other than if you want to consider Isaac a big, but I guess he's considered more of like a 3-4 combo. So, yeah, you have the top bigs who are second-rate bigs any other year, you think?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And then this glut of wings like Donovan Mitchell, Justin Jackson, Kennard, Anunoby, like those guys. And they're all good. I mean, is it possible that someone can draft Express right now? They have Smith at 8 and then Neely Kina at 11. If you get Fox, do you also just roll the dice on Neely Kina and say whatever? Like, you just stockpile?
You could probably play a little bit of 2.
I mean...
But they already have. I guess if you let Ben Magwemore walk, it's not
right.
Ridiculous.
I mean, he hasn't... They haven't shown any commitment to him anyway.
No, I'm interested to see if anyone even offers him a contract and if the Kings even match.
They don't have much in the way of actual young, sustainable... I mean, look at their depth chart. Collison, Lawson.
Lawson's gone.
Right. Langston Galloway.
Probably not gone. He's a player option.
Aflalo.
He better be gone. I think his contract's not gone.
Buddy's the one keeper. So, what if you just took the two point guards and said, screw it, you know?
And just made one top, be like, oh, our view.
I mean, you already have Willie, you already have Cauley-Stein, Skal.
I forgot about Cauley-Stein for a minute.
Papa Giannis isn't, like, the worst. He was okay in spot duty. He's got a lot of development.
They need to trade Kosta Kufos.
Yeah, they do. But, I mean, they could just stand to do that and then roll the dice. I don't hate that.
All right, so let's kind of wrap up this way.
Yeah.
Give me your order, your guess, best guess order of how it's going to go 1 through 5.
My gut now.
Let's go 1, Celtics.
Okay, so I'd say Fultz is a lock then.
I agree. Lakers at 2.
Lonzo.
I agree, but I don't want to agree. They should take.
It seems is it just me, or is there already the counter narrative of, oh, it would be too easy to take Lonzo? So everyone is already getting off that and like already trying to prepare for the next month to make it exciting. Well, talking about, I don't doubt that they have interest in these guys, but like it just seems like it has to happen.
To me, you have to kick over the unless you're planning on moving D'Angelo Russell and or Jordan Clarkson after this. That's such a weird 3-guard rotation, and we talk about the potential for Lonzo on defense, the potential for Russell on defense. There's no guarantee these guys even turn into even defenders.
Yeah, let alone plus defenders. I told Andy last night on Twitter, he was like, I kind of like those two together. I was like, I think it's a defensive catastrophe, but
they can end up being the next Lillard McCollum, basically.
Right. Which, I mean...
Right, but then you have
fun,
to...
Fun, entertaining, but what's your, you know, what's your end game?
Philly at 3.
Jackson.
I agree with that, too.
Run the card to the podium if he's there.
If Jackson doesn't go in the top 3... I'm going to be mad at all 3 teams, even if the Celtics take Fultz and are classified as winners. Phoenix.
I'd say they take the best wing, so they take Tatum.
And then to wrap it up with the Kings, they got to go Fox, right?
Fox has to be.
I agree with pretty much all those. I could kind of see, maybe not, if Phoenix thinks that Monk could play some small forward, maybe they would consider him there.
I could see that. I could see Monk, honestly, I could envision a scenario where the Sixers talk themselves into Monk. I don't think that's likely to happen, but I could see it just because he does fit exactly what they need.
Right.
On offense, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, Jackson fits literally everything else, but but yeah.
The Magic should offer number 6 and Aaron Gordon for number 2 and then draft Lonzo Ball.
My favorite thing is the Magic just always being one step right outside the inner. Like, you're like, oh, this is a this isn't a 5-player draft. It's not. There's 6, 7, 8, 9 really good prospects, but like, they just
This is their third like top six pick in the last 4 years. They picked Hezonja at number five in 2015, Gordon at number four in 2014, Oladipo at two in 2013. Those three guys haven't.
Yeah, talk about not developing. They're like, well, they rival the Knicks. I'm serious.
They do, but they at least you thought these guys were like Victor Oladipo hasn't lit up Oklahoma City after.
We're running past time, but can I suggest one last thing?
Yes.
Could the Magic take Dennis Smith? Do we really think Elfrid Payton is like
he was so they good need at the end of the season? Granted, small sample size, and this always seems to happen with the Magic, where we're like, well, at the end of the season, they play like a playoff team.
And then we talk about it all summer, right, and it's great.
But
and
the offense was so good, and Payton was so good together towards the end of the season. And if you're going to, I'm not against drafting another point guardish type, but it would need to be someone who could play off him, and that's not Smith.
I just don't hate the idea of getting another, like, another supplementary playmaker for him, because like Fournier's good, but like roster does nothing for me.
To be fair,
look at their wing options.
Yeah, look, they can't go wrong in free agency or the draft unless they look at another power forward or center. That's the only way they could strike out. If you want to throw Monk on there, if you even want to throw Smith, and you're done with Payton, who's extension eligible, whatever at this point. But I think Monk would be optimal for them there. If they go Gordon at number six for number two, is that too much for the Magic to get Lonzo?
I'm a huge Aaron Gordon fanboy, so I think that's a little too much. But I would do anything to see him get out of there, and I'd love to see. But also, can't you see the Lakers being like, well, Gordon is super redundant with Randall here? Like, they have identical skill sets. I don't see that blowing over, no.
Anyway, we'll leave it there because I want to go because the draft talk is making me Knicks depressed. If you want to follow Alec on Twitter and get at him about his draft takes, both from this podcast and the bad ones that have yet to come, you can follow him at Alec B. Nathan. That is spelt exactly like it sounds. I got your Twitter handle right, correct?
Yeah, correct. Sweet.
If you want to follow me, I'm at Dan Favale. That's Favale. You can talk to Andy at Andrew D. Bailey, also spelt like it sounds. And be sure to follow at Hardwood Knox. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a rating. Give us 5 stars because you don't have a choice in the matter. I will not be giving a shout out to He Who Must Not Be Named because I'm hijacking this podcast and don't need to. Until next time.